Hello and welcome to Cinemarathon, the Movie Marathons podcast where we watch movie marathons all in one day and talk about them later. This month we are doing the Kevin Smith, Jay and Silent Bob movies. This is part two. If you missed part one, be sure to go and check that out. But for now, here is part two.
Welcome back for part two. Guys, you ready to talk more Kevin Smith?
Heck yeah.
Please.
Awesome.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Maybe. So after...
Actually, I'm here to talk more Kevin James. Matthew and I are doing a separate podcast. No. Mallrats versus Mall Cop.
Paul Blart versus LaFleur.
Exactly.
LaFleur's.
Well, the next movie, the next Kevin Smith movie was Dogma. Which, I'm actually surprised watching it again. I had a memory where first I saw it and really liked it. And then I had a memory I was a little bit older, saw it again, and thought it was kind of bad. And then came back to it in this marathon, and I kind of started to like it again. But I think it's a really flawed movie. Like, its parts are great, and parts are, I think, not very good.
Lay it out for us. What's the good part? What's the bad part?
Well, I think easily the best part is all of the Angel stuff, with specifically Bartleby and Loki, like Matt Damon.
Yeah, co-sign.
I think, like, perfect. And then I think a lot, the Jay and Silent Bob stuff I think is pretty good. Chris Rock I think is okay, but has moments of it's not quite working for me.
Yeah.
And then especially Selma Hayek I think is pretty bad.
She's terrible.
But I think ultimately my problem with the movie has less to do with the content and more the presentation.
Definitely.
Because most of Kevin Smith's movies have been very mental, a lot of talking. It's just sort of a social, almost like play. But the events of Dogma are super, like, it's God and war against heaven, and it's super big, and there's all these action scenes that should be, like, huge, but all the action scenes are really not very good.
Yeah.
And not, I mean, it's the fucking, like, end of the world. It should be pretty epic, and it's all, like, shit monsters coming out, and it's, any action is not that great. Like, I think that's a real detriment to the movie, that it's not more visually stimulating as like a end of the world movie.
Yeah, and along those lines, I think this is the first time, like, even though Kevin Smith's movies have always been very talky, and it's always been, all of the talkiness of his movies have been mostly out of character, is like character driven, you know? It's like Clerks, there's no real narrative, you're just kind of getting these snippets of people, and you really like these people because they're interesting characters. When Dogma shows up, he has this huge mythology that I think he had to spend so much time in this script explaining to you the Christian mythology that in most movies, like, you know what I mean? It's a classic, it's all tell and not showing. It's like he breaks like the first rule of show, don't tell. Well, know what I mean?
Yeah, like in Clerks, it's almost forgivable because they're just talking about like Gatorade and Star Wars and their dudes jocking a register. And so you're like, okay, yeah, sure. But like in Dogma, yeah, like the mouth of God comes down or Selma Hayek comes down and all these figures do. Like, Chris Rock falls from the sky, and there's not a discussion of, like, holy shit, like, who are you? You fell from the sky, like, how'd that happen?
I'm pretty sure that's exactly
the conversation. No, it's there, but what I mean is the characters in the movie don't react like real people.
It's, no.
Like, especially the main girl, she doesn't go through it like, what the fuck is going on? Like, she gets teleported to a Mexican restaurant, and it's just sitting there kind of like, oh, God, huh? Yeah, okay, I guess, whatever. Like, she's in no way acting like a real person, being like, who the fuck are you? Like, why'd you take me here?
Yeah,
like,
this movie, I think, was definitely written with the idea that its prime audience wouldn't have a knowledge of that, of the Christian history.
Yeah.
Because every time some character comes up, it's this very self-aware way, oh, you've never heard of me? Well, let me explain to you what my history is in the Christian, you know.
Chris Rock falls from the sky and he's like, yeah, it's me, the apostle. And then he just stands there in the freeway.
Yeah.
Talks for 10 minutes while everyone's like, oh, yeah, okay, well, getting in the car. Like,
I mean, it's helpful to me as a viewer because I don't know a lot about that stuff. And so, like, as I'm being guided through the movie, like, holding my hand, like, for all these, like, ideas and concepts I've never heard of, I think it would have been a better movie if he trusted the audience to have that knowledge or to assume that they'll look it up or something and just have those characters play out just as they are. You know what I mean? He doesn't...
Right, and you'll just figure it out.
And it's up to you to be an intelligent or, like, viewer or someone with that experience.
Right. Would it feel less like a lecture?
Exactly. I feel like I'm sitting in, like, my... like Bible 101, like Sunday school class.
But what's crazy is I think the angel scenes with Bartleby and Loki have the same sort of kind of diatribe of like giving you all this information, but they weave it in a way that because of those characters, like it happened to them.
Yeah.
it totally plays because you're getting their
better actors
story arc.
Too.
Yeah,
well, they're not, and they're not talking to you, the audience, and telling you what's up.
Right, they're
having a conversation, and you're just figuring it out. Like, yeah. They'll make reference to stuff that you might not totally understand because it's not totally clear. They don't say, like, hey, we're angels, and this is our history. They're just talking, and it's on you to kind of, the onus is on you to kind of figure out
right. And I think
the story.
I think that's primarily motivated by the idea that they're not interacting with Fiorentino, who's basically the audience. Fiorentino
right.
is the
who
audience
are you?
In that movie.
What are you doing here?
Like, exactly. Yeah. So, like, the Ben Affleck and Matt Damon, they don't need to explain their situation because they're just being who they are.
Is there a way you can make that movie with just Jay and Silent Bob, and you just don't have her, and then you just,
yeah,
is
you
it
make
a better
Jay
movie?
The last Scion.
I think what you do is you get rid of Chris Rock and you get rid of Salma Hayek. Because if you think about it, as much as I like Chris Rock, I think he says some funny ass shit in the movie, but his dude falls down. What is his character arc?
But who he leads
what is
them?
He doing
who else
there?
Who else?
Well,
helps
he
up?
Leads
do you put
them,
Rickman
but,
back in there. Or?
But I'm just saying he has no like he cares, I guess, because the fate of the universe is on the line. But his character's the
Jesus
same
is
dude.
His homeboy.
Right. He's the same dude at the end of the movie that he was when he fell
well,
into the movie.
And it
well,
seems
he's
like
a dead eternal being. Right?
But that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't care now. Like, I'm not emotionally invested in him as a character because there's no arc to him.
All the additional characters seem to be put in the movie to get Linda Fiorentino's character of Bethany
yeah.
back on the trail. Like, she's done. She doesn't want to do this thing. And then Jay and Silent Bob come in and go, oh, I guess I'll go on this quest. Then she says, no, I'm done with this now. And then Chris Rock falls from the sky and says, no, you need to do this. Okay, I'm going to do this. Nope, I'm done again after this whole thing. It's like, well, let's go into this bar. Here's another angel. Oh, okay, maybe I should do this now. And then, oh, I'm done with it again. Oh, no, Alan Rickman's now joining the group too. It's like, oh, okay, I guess I will keep doing this. She does that too many times. She gives up, then a new character comes in to join the group, and then she's all, okay, I'll keep going.
Yeah, at that point, either you believe the world's going to end or you don't. And you
yeah.
make
right, how
choice.
Much more convincing do
yeah.
you
yeah,
need?
It's like, such a drag when it's like the main character like doesn't want the movie to happen. It's like,
yeah.
come on, like let's
right.
get it going.
Well, and I get it that like her backstory is actually kind of interesting that it's like
yeah.
she had this husband and she couldn't bear child and this guy leaves her and now she hates God for it.
Which
like,
is kind of twisted because she's all angry that she can't have a child so she goes to help women get rid of their children.
Yeah, that's kind of a weird.
But I think that's what I mean when like, so Alan Rickman comes down from heaven, lights flames in her room, she douses him out and then he transports her to a
she's
Mexican
still
restaurant.
Pissed.
Well,
yeah.
she wakes
like,
up from a dream.
Well, no, I know she wakes up from a dream, but her mannerisms and character in the movie are not like war on God. Like, what are you talking about? Everything's like, well, I guess I'll fucking like,
in the face of that sort of
ass.
Knowledge.
It's not like
so bad.
Imagine
like,
if you were watching a movie like Bill and Ted and like Rufus shows up and then they're just like, nah. Like, you know, like I don't want to
yeah.
do that.
I'm hungry. Go away.
Nah.
Okay. But
I don't
Chris Rock
do.
Tries
they're
to explain
it.
her motivation or lack thereof with his speech that they
right.
give him. So
and
you
not
know,
to
bear
totally,
that in mind.
Like give her shit because I think there are moments in the movie where she's actually pretty good. I think they're like when she's talking to Ben Affleck in the train
yeah.
and has a pretty like she's like laughing about how ridiculous the quest is.
I think she's decent
drunk.
Throughout.
It's pretty good.
I really
yeah,
don't
yeah.
have a problem with her like you do.
But no, it's almost it's not even the performance. It's like the writing.
Yeah.
It's like, why is she so like bummed out? Like Marty, we got to go back to the future. No. Like, who wants to watch that
yeah,
movie?
I don't believe your time machine works.
Yeah.
Being dragged
I still don't
every
believe
step
it.
Away.
Do you think that Kevin Smith is unable to really write a good script that isn't about Kevin Smith being Kevin Smith?
Yeah, because the angel part. Like, Matt Damon and Ben Affleck on the road as angels is great. And it has nothing to do with Star Wars or...
Yeah.
I mean, a little bit. They talk about, like, Alice in Wonderland. There's some pop culture stuff going on. But the majority of what they're talking about is... Well, I guess you're just saying now he's referencing old biblical stuff. In,
yeah, it's
in
just
place
two dudes basically yeah. standing against a wall talking about whatever.
But
yeah,
I think
whatever,
it's almost unfair for us to sort of like give him shit because the subject matter of the movie is, I think, incredibly difficult.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of why it
yeah,
doesn't work
it.
All the way. Because it's such a, like, undertake. It's such
it's a,
like, a
noble
grand
fucking
movie.
Effort. For,
yeah.
For, I mean, how do you market this movie?
It's a cool idea for a movie.
Yeah, like,
yeah.
like
yeah.
good for him for, like, giving
good
it
idea.
A shot.
Well, dude was
like,
an altar boy. You know, he is a hardcore, or was a hardcore Catholic for a long time,
yeah.
Even up through that movie. And he clearly thinks a lot about all that stuff. So I'm not as impressed, I guess, by it.
I guess. I think the angel storyline is really clever. Like, that's
yeah.
really cool. Like, the loophole and the end of existence.
Yeah.
Like, it's a cool story.
I love the scene where they go to the Golden Calf, like, movie boardroom. I love that scene. Like, that almost stands on its own as, like, a short or something. And I remember at the time, this is sort of when we did The Matrix, it was sort of the same thing, but I kind of remember this was close to like Columbine when it came out. And there was sort of this like, from people because these
you
dudes
can't murder a bunch of people
in trench coats.
Yeah, yeah, they're in like, I mean, they're not in like, yeah, I guess
to hide
yeah,
their wings.
Coats.
Yeah,
yeah, and but they're running around killing people. Now, obviously, it's miles away from. I don't think it's like.
Dude, they're totally listening to Marilyn Manson, and then they played Doom, and then they murdered all those people.
Gus Van Sant's in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, and he made a Columbine movie.
That's
dun,
true.
Dun, dun.
But it's to me, it's pretty ballsy to like. I mean, I think most of us aren't. I mean, I know I'm not like incredibly religious, or I'm not offended by kind of making light at Christianity. But obviously, like, there are a lot of people in this country that are, and to make this movie where you're sort of poking fun at Christianity,
Catholicism.
Yeah, well, Catholicism specifically. And then to have these two characters like kind of like jokingly blow people away and murder them without sort of like any remorse. It's interesting.
Yeah,
like,
I don't remember there
ballsy.
Being, I mean, maybe I just don't remember, but was there a huge backlash against this movie?
It
huge.
Was a little bit, yeah. There was like picketing and stuff.
There
yeah.
were. And I remember specifically, I think it's like the boardroom scene where they shoot everyone in the boardroom and the bus scene where they shoot everybody in the bus. Or he shoots the guy.
The one guy.
Like laughing and doing dances afterwards. It all makes sense when you think about him as he's the like wrath of God.
They do impale people on a church.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Kevin Smith in a way is being like, you know, this shit's in the Bible and it's kind of fucked up and like this happens.
I want to know how they got to film at that location with the church.
Maybe it wasn't a church.
I was gonna say, like, I mean, I was thinking, like, it might be like a really gothic looking library or something.
It could
like
have
that.
Been a church that they moved out and decommissioned it because they don't raise churches after they stop using them.
Speaking of churches, we should talk a little bit about it's at the beginning of the movie, but I think the mock up of Buddy Christ
is
awesome.
It's pretty fun. That's a pretty good joke. Like, that's pretty funny. That just him, like, fucking, like, cockeyed and, like.
Well, that's how they marketed the whole movie. And
yeah.
Yeah, and I don't even think it's, like, I mean, I think it's funny because I think it's pretty spot on with the way people approach religion these days. Like, the other day, I was telling you guys how now there's, like, an iPhone app that the Catholic Church condones as being, like, a confession app.
Yeah.
Like, holy crap.
You can give, like rights to it, like, last
literally,
something.
Literally holy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. No, it was, like, I think that was a really clever spin that he put to that. What do you guys think about Alanis, the Morris?
I actually don't have a huge problem with
it. I actually like
it. It's fine.
I don't like that entire aspect.
Yeah, I know you're
kind of neutral on it.
To me, it's like after all the other characters, she's no more ridiculous than any of the other.
I don't know. She does that headstand or whatever, and it's just like, what the? I don't understand.
Well, to me, it's like at least it's unique and different.
Like, I feel like, to me, the challenge is of if you're going to have God walk out, that's a pretty tough.
Yeah.
Like, I know, what is it, in The Stand, they have, like, a giant CG hand of God comes out. It's laughably terrible. Yeah. So to me, it's like, if you're faced with
that. What other movie gods are there? Movie Christian God.
Bruce Almighty, which is like.
George Burns.
Okay.
But to me, like, okay, you're faced with, like, now God walks out. What do we do? Wow. And of all the things, like.
Bill and Ted 2. Do you ever see God?
No.
He just says station. Like, really.
The Sarah Silverman program has that black guy.
Yeah.
As God, which I actually.
She sleeps with him.
She sleeps with him. And I saw him at the DMV.
Yeah.
Standing in line, which was weird.
But
for
I feel like to put God in a human form and have it come out at all is completely ridiculous. I mean, the whole idea of God is this unknowable and like.
No, but why Alanis Morissette doing it?
I thought it's kind of.
Why not? Well, what I really did, when I saw Alanis, why did God need to have an old man body like
Blood
that
core,
he could get caught in when he could just appear as
skee-balling.
Literally appear as anyone? So like, is he as vulnerable as Alanis? As he was as Bud Cort?
Maybe the interpretation is God will only take Alanis form under extreme, extreme circumstances, like when angels and stuff or biblical elements are affecting human life. But if human life is just sort of happening, then she goes in under Bud Cort disguise.
Right. Yeah, I think especially he was old guy because he just wanted to go play skee ball without anybody fucking with him.
Yeah.
Like, who's approaching that guy?
And we can get into an intense debate about the whole idea. He's Bud Cort. He's in human form. He's bound to Earth. But as Alanis Morissette, he's God. But, I mean, it's a human walking around. Like, what's the different.
Why not just skee-ball as a line of
yeah, yeah, it doesn't not really that was, make...
There are no loopholes in the Bible, all right? It is a sound document.
But that's why, to me, like, if you're going to show God, it's so illogical to begin with, so you might as well just kind of make
do whatever
a joke
the fuck
out of it.
And
I actually
yeah, I'm
think
okay
she's
kind of
cute, like, handstanding and doing, like, boop, and, like, booping noses. Why not? Because the whole joke is
he's
like,
so
hey,
upset
what
about
are you
it. I just hate it for some reason. I don't even mind her, or her music, or anything. Like,
I remember
dated
it a
girl
got
in college
a big
who
laugh
identical
when I first
to
saw
her.
The movie.
I just didn't get it. I don't know.
Is there anything else about Dogma before we move on that we didn't?
Great
cover?
Casting. I mean, as far as
what about the
aside
effects?
From Linda Fiorentino?
Yeah, the effects.
Practical effects are awesome. CG effects are bad.
Yeah, like the wings, the puppet wings.
The puppet wings are cool.
Looks amazing.
Yeah.
I like the shit monster, the actual rubber suit shit monster.
Yeah.
I liked the even the like.
I like the look. I don't like the joke itself, but it looks all right.
His little horns were cool, and even the work with the squibs with like the one moment where he blows that holy bartender away, even that was really well done.
It's awesome. Like, all those effects that were still practical at that time, 1999. If they made that movie now, everything would be CG. Like the wings would all be CG.
Yeah,
and that sucks.
Yeah,
like that crap movie Legion, which was half real, half CG wings.
I think the concept of how the ship monster came into being, the story that they tell of that, is really cool.
Well, that's biblical, right?
Yeah, I think, I mean, you guys paying attention? I mean, you guys know, remember the...
Yeah, it's the shit.
It's
the shit of crucified people.
Yeah, when they died, their bowel and bladder all gave, the muscles gave way, and it's just like piled up and... that Gold became Gotham. All
it
the
became
evil.
A demon, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, oh, that's kind of a cool idea.
Yeah, it's pretty
intense.
It's more the death. It's more how it gets killed to me than it is that it exists.
Jay just Sam Bob walks up and sprays it with like banaka or something.
He might
like,
as well pulled out a carrot.
I think it's supposed to be like odor eaters.
Right.
Yeah, it's like, but just the fact that it was like it's a gag. I mean, it's just like a knock strong.
Well, it's a weird fine line between like Stay Puffed, which I think is genius.
Fucking
and
awesome.
Like shit
that's,
monster.
That's one of the best jokes of
which
all
time. Which sort of like kind of falls flat a little bit for me personally.
No, I don't. I'm not even debating its use in the movie. I just mean like the rubber suit I thought was cool.
Yeah I think the practical effects on shit monster were fine.
Yeah.
I'm glad we all
in
agree
a very serious
that,
moment.
That they really portrayed that walking pile of shit with.
I've not seen a walking pile of shit monster.
We will get to walking piles of shit in a couple of
it's
movies.
Clerks
but,
too.
but next on the list is Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back.
Motherfuck, motherfuck, fuck, motherfuck, motherfuck, noise. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4, noise. Smoking weed, doing coke, drinking beers. Rolling fatty, smoking blunts. Who smokes the blunts? Rolling blunts and smoking.
Which is an interesting addition to the Kevin Smith canon. It's crazy. Like, when that movie came out, I fucking adored it.
I remember I was sitting next to you guys and you
adored
you were on the floor practically.
Oh, I know.
You couldn't understand.
It was like
so
every wish I ever had was like exactly what I wanted to be. And now as an adult watching it, I mean, Dan, I don't know if you feel this way, but it's definitely not like a great movie or even not like that good a movie, but I'd say parts are still pretty
It's still funny,
funny
but it's not.
But yeah.
Motherfuck, noise. Smoking beers, drinking beers. Rolling fatty, smoking blunts.
Who got the blunts? We got the blunts.
When that movie came out,
I still
hated it, but it was tolerable this time, I guess.
So what, now when, Alexa, when it came out, what about it made you hate it?
Because that was the first time where I feel like Kevin Smith got caught in the Kevin Smith world trap where he spent the entire movie just like using it to combat all of the negative press that he had taken up to that point in his career. Even if the negative press is coming from fucking Ain't It Cool News, which is a character in the movie. I didn't care enough about Kevin Smith's world to watch an entire movie of him explaining how he feels when people make fun of his movies. Which is kind of what that is.
Well, it's weird. In a lot of this view-esque universe that we watch, I mean, we didn't really talk about this earlier on, but it's interesting that all these movies, while they do stand on their own as just movies, all like interweave into each other in these weird ways. Like there's all these same stories about these people in Jersey that we kind of meet sometimes and sometimes don't.
Well, the first three, he's an independent filmmaker and they all exist in his personal world. And then Dogma, we step out of the, it's in the VSC universe, but it's out of Kevin Smith's life. And then when we step back into Kevin Smith's life, his life has changed and I don't like the place he's at, I guess.
Well, what's crazy to me is like, the other movies, I feel like there are winks and nods to this kind of like fanboy service, but it's not overt. It doesn't take over
the plot. The plot isn't a road movie to beat up people on the Ain't It Cool Board.
Jay and Silent Bob loses its mind in just complete winks
and
nods.
But that movie is like what he's thinking when he's making it is like it's like a last hurrah. It's like. Right. This is for the fan, but like I'm gonna make a movie for my fans. Yeah. That's what he's thinking.
It's like Kevin Smith at his most self-indulgent. You know what I mean? It's like there was never a moment in editorial when he was sitting there thinking maybe I shouldn't put this in because it doesn't serve the film. It was like this is going in because I think it's funny.
Dude,
the fans
will
think it's funny.
Where was TS, man? I wanted. Where was he? he didn't come back.
Kevin Lyman was a hardcore drug addict. Honestly, if he wasn't, then he probably would have ended up in there just to mock.
And Claire Forlani was just too high and mighty.
I mean, I get the same feeling watching Jay and Silent Bob that I did when I first watched Death Proof, like by Tarantino. You know what I mean? It was like to me there was
that's totally wrong.
You tread dangerous waters.
I mean, maybe
only in the sense that I feel like it's like there was a moment in both of their careers where they said, you know what, I'm going to make a movie that I just want to make. And it doesn't sort of matter whether or not it's critically accepted or that if, you know, the audience thinks it's a good movie. These are just the ideas I want to put on the page.
Well, it's interesting to bring up Grindhouse movie because that is kind of in the same weird vein of Grindhouse is like very intentionally sensational and like let's just make like this kind of fake fun movie.
Yeah,
but they're interacting with the genre. They're not interacting with themselves as a person.
Well, I think that Kevin Smith was interacting with his genre.
Yeah, but what I mean, it's not like all the characters in Death Proof were like a bunch of characters from previous.
Yeah, you give Kevin Smith way too much credit,
and they're all sitting there talking about the old movies.
The only comparison I was really making was I think on some level you have to agree that there is a self indulgence involved with Death Proof. That could, in theory, say that Kevin Smith had a self-indulgence in Jay and Silent Bob. That's the only thing I'm saying.
We could argue on that about the self-indulgence of Death Proof, but I think we can all agree that Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back is one of the most self-indulgent movies.
He's like ever.
I mean, it's pretty self-indulgent.
When he meets new characters are like the most refreshing and funny parts of that movie. Like Tracy Morgan in that movie awesome.
I just like his name, Pumpkin Escobar.
You almost want to like stay with those guys. Let's keep this movie going.
Yeah, why did
like,
we have to revisit every single other
character?
The
jewel heist people should have been Pumpkin Escobar.
My god! Like talking about indulgent, like putting his wife in that movie.
We don't bad choice. Yeah,
the clip crew of like those diamond heist girls, they take that's up like worst. 20 minutes of the movie, like going in there
more than 20 minutes
dancing around in the lasers and all the like music video shots of them like posing sexy and walking around.
And it's all just terrible. It's all just for them to get the monkey into the movie, like they could just have easily have like been like walking down the street and a zoo truck I mean literally it could say zoo truck on the side tumbles over and all the animals escape and they find a monkey in the wreckage.
Yeah, there's easier ways to set them up with that orangutan.
I mean, I understand the love interest for Jay because, I mean, that's something that Jay and Silent Bob have never really had as much as they talk about sex.
I'll justify it just for the devil on the shoulder with devil on the other shoulder sequence. That's pretty fucking
Yeah, funny. I think it's, I mean, we didn't watch it in the marathon, but someone mentioned it while we were watching that the Clerks cartoon came out after Dogma, but prior to Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. And I can't remember who it was. Was it you, Dan, or Alexa? Dan, I think you had the pointed view.
It spilled over, kind of. Yeah, like that. Like the Scooby was where the Scooby-Doo scene happened. It's like, okay, now this is just right out of the Clerks cartoon.
It is a cartoon.
This is a scene in the Clerks cartoon. Yeah. This is, you know.
And that's sort of almost kind of Family Guy-esque, like, let's just throw it to a bit about Scooby-Doo for no reason at all. Like,
yes.
It just sort of
where they literally
up.
Are Scooby-Doo. It's a very like Family Guy joke.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very cartoonish. It's crazy. It's so mind-boggling to me that like earlier in this podcast, we were waxing poetic about our sex lives and the intricacies of relationships, and like Chasing Amy hit us in such a way that we all love it so much.
It
and
was
then,
good,
right? And then it's like this. What? How? Well, why did well, he make
funny.
This?
Okay, okay. Right. I think that that we mentioned that his wife is part of that group of girls and sticks out like a sore thumb. And I think that that's a good, yeah, it's a good metaphor for the whole movie though, because I respect wanting to, you know, write this love letter to my wife by including her amongst the group of hot chicks in the movie. But at the same time, he's clearly serving Kevin Smith's interests in doing that and not the interests of the movie.
Well, from the story I remember,
I agree.
Yeah, the story I remember is that wasn't written with his wife in mind. It was like he wrote the script.
Well, exactly, even
and
better.
Then, but then his apparently his wife read the script and he said like, "Hey, honey, you want a part in my movie? Like, pick one." And then she was like, I'm going to be one of the hot-ass Diamond Heist chicks. And he's like, all right. Yeah. And then I remember in the special features I watched where he's like, oh, man, the night before we shot, I was like, what the fuck was I thinking? This isn't going to work. But then she totally pulled it off. Yeah, like, yeah. Oh, my wife, what a trooper. Like, so he wrote the Diamond Heist shit? Like, it's not like that's like a like made for his wife to be in a movie.
No. But that was like that part actually of the makes movie. My point for me, I think, a little better in that he is inserting in her into a hot chick role, and you know she's a little bit older and not quite as hot, and for the sake of the movie he's got it written already, he's putting a square peg in a round hole, and I think that's a bad decision and it hurts the movie. But at the same time, it's the movie is to make Kevin Smith happy, and that is what he did. He made himself happy by making his wife happy.
Well, going back to what you're saying about
she fucks him
Chasing Amy, and like there's that scene in Chasing Amy where Holden's like, you know, I don't, because it's coming right off of Mallrats, where he's like, you know, I don't want to know if I really just want to be writing dick jokes, and then kind of want
to
do something
more
personal, like my first book. So you're like, oh, Clerks. And then Joy Lauren Adams' character is like, well, when do you think you'll do that? And he's like, well, you know, when I have something personal to say, which is like, okay, the movie we're watching right now. So then you come back and it's like, well, he's back. Like, it's the here we are with the
dick
jokes.
Yeah, he does
again,
almost like editorialize like, in his own movies. They just, whenever they have real talk, it's like clearly he's just talking about his own work.
Like the part in Jane Silent Bob Strike Back where Affleck, they go meet, where he's playing Holden, but then he's like, don't you want more for your lives than just like being these idiot characters? Like,
right,
especially
like
you.
Speech.
And like points at Kevin Smith.
Yeah.
But maybe that's the whole point of this movie is he's saying, I'm going to move on, but before I
one
do
last
that,
hurrah,
is, like, this is going to be like this last ride where we just reference everything. There's a million cameos. This is just all for the fans. Like, that's how I remember how
it does feel like the movie's made not to make a great film, but purely like to have fun making it.
To have fun with
and
it.
And to keep his friend off of drugs. Right? Isn't there this whole story of like Jason Mewes is like a drug addict? And in order to, I think it's like in order to keep him sober.
He sort of makes him the promise of like, you get clean and I'll make a movie about you. And then he stays clean enough, long enough at least to make that movie. I know he relapses afterwards, but no.
I mean, that's
kind of
crazy.
The movie is self-serving on every single level.
Yeah.
And some of that, like, there are a lot of parts of Kevin Smith and his sense of humor and his body of work that are really entertaining, you know? And when he hits the common ground of things that Kevin Smith finds funny and things that we find funny, then it works. But a lot of that movie is not even about what Kevin Smith finds funny. It's about Kevin Smith serving everybody who talks shit about him up until that point. And that's what I find really boring.
But as much as we're kind of ripping on the movie, I will not deny that Jay and Silent Bob has me laughing.
There are funny parts in it.
Like, dude, like, what is it? When Jay's in Ben Affleck's apartment and he's like, dude, what the fuck is the internet? Like, that's
that
fucking
is funny.
Hilarious.
Dude, Jay and Silent Bob are funny characters.
Yeah.
Or like, in the movies or whatever. When Shannon Elizabeth walks in?
The makeout and he's got the boner.
That borders on this level of like, part of me is laughing and then the other part of me is like, really?
Well,
like,
I mean, it's really
prosthetic
base, but
dick,
I mean, that's the whole. That's
he's
the whole James
dry humping the air with a boner coming out.
That's
funny
shit. And he's singing the song that's playing in his fantasy.
The face that Will Ferrell makes shooting the gun.
Yeah, I really like that too. Like when he's just like popping him off and he's like, ugh. Like,
well, Will Ferrell, that's another thing. Will Ferrell's just a funny guy. Like if you put him in a movie, he's going to make you laugh.
He makes funny faces.
Like,
Cockknocker, Mark Hamill. That's another one where it's like, oh man, I shouldn't be thinking this is as funny as it is.
Do you think they freezed it and put his name on there because
with that costume, they thought people wouldn't recognize him.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think they've even said as much. Like I think they had initial screenings and like people didn't realize who it was.
It didn't even
joke if you don't know who Mark Hamill is.
Because he's so made up, he's got crazy hair and makeup and this giant
that
hand.
Anime hair is
like,
funny.
I think his outfit is really funny. Us as like nerds would probably maybe not even immediately, but after a minute would hear his voice and be like, oh, that's the Joker. That's
or when he breaks the fourth wall.
Right.
You'd probably not pick again. It up by...
But honestly, your average Joe, I don't think would watch. They'd watch it and they wouldn't realize it was Luke Skywalker. And the thing is, if they'd have put, hey kids, it's Luke Skywalker, then people would know. But I guarantee you, even after the lightsabering
and
all that stuff, there are people who've watched the movie, I bet, don't even realize it's Luke Skywalker.
Well, that's like when, you know, while we were watching it, we mentioned the concept of people renting that movie who had never seen any of the other Kevin Smith movies and just enjoying it as a movie about a couple of stupid stoners who go on a road trip.
For sure that's happened.
I just think they think that Jason Mewes is funny and you don't – the stuff he says is funny and you don't need to know the other movies to really get it. You need to know the other movies to understand the plot and like the licensing.
Well, we
thing.
Laugh about it. It's so confusing that there's the same actors playing multiple characters, and the movie doesn't really give you much to let you know that. Other than, you kind of just have to come to the table knowing the history. But if you didn't know anything about Jigsaw Bob or anything, and then you go and then like Ben Affleck's one guy, but he's also Ben Affleck. And Jason Lee's two different people. Like,
Jason Lee holds up a picture of himself as a different character.
Like that would be. Just mind-bogglingly confusing.
It's kind of funny really that anybody signed off on it. Like, that there's an actual studio that's like,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, this will make us money.
Well, it isn't an actual studio. It's Miramax.
Well, I'm sure part of the reason that they let him even make the movie was, hey, you know, I'll get Ben Affleck and Matt Damon to be in this movie.
Gus Van Sant count money? Well, that's funny side gag.
It's all worth it. For Good Will Hunting.
Chris Rock is amazing.
Oh, yeah. Chris Rock
is best. Chris Rock is the funniest part of the whole movie.
I think that might be my... Luther King?
Shaka Luka King?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, that might be my favorite Chris Rock.
Luther King.
Oh, really? Shaka Luther King?
Shaka Luther King.
Oh, God. That's even funnier.
I just like when he's like, taste the booger flavor. That's the best part of the whole movie. And at the time when I first watched it, I would not have definitely said that that was my favorite part because I was just into all the like dick jokes.
Yeah, it was all snooch the news.
Now I think that that's the best part.
Dude, I think that Tracy Morgan.
Pumpkin Escobar.
Pumpkin Escobar with the drug dealer cards and just that conversation there. I don't know. I thought that was awesome.
You just said. Little kid, but you special. So, I mean, at the end of the day, Jay and Silent Bob is a funny and strange movie. Like, there's good parts to it. It makes
us laugh.
I'll
be fine never seeing it
again. I wouldn't call it a good movie, but it makes me laugh. But this sort
it was an appropriate and tolerable and mostly funny movie to end the VUSQ universe, and it should have stayed that
right.
way.
Yeah. Let's keep. Yeah, we didn't really bring
that
up.
Whole movie's like a last hurrah. Like that should be.
That's
the
true. Yeah, it was. It came out as we are closing the books.
Yeah,
and so this brings us into the final film of the marathon, Clerks 2.
Well, before we get.
Oh,
well,
I'm sorry. Go right ahead.
No, I just want to mention that there is another movie in between this that we didn't cover only because it's not Jay and Silent Bob. But
right.
It was a more
Jersey Girl
it was now. A more serious attempt again, not
non-USQ
like, so
though.
Yeah, not like Chasing Amy, you know, serious. I mean, it was an attempt though to tell a serious straight story, and I think that that's important to bring up only because
we
say like, oh, you know, ever since Chasing Amy, he's been on Dick and Fart, but he did try to make this other movie.
Yeah, I
and
would
so
agree
I think it's,
that
it's
that
important to bring up.
Jersey Girl is as personal to Kevin Smith as Chasing Amy was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, I know we didn't watch it, but
I'd say,
yeah.
Well, I mean, with that context in mind, that he goes, I'm done, closes the VUSQ universe, goes and makes a movie, Jersey Girl, which bombs, that he loves on the par with
and
Chasing
his fans
Amy, and bombs.
Specifically shit on it.
So. And rather than standing strong with that or trying something else, the next movie and the final one in this marathon is Clerks 2. Back to the well and makes Clerks 2.
So how frustrating is it that he makes a movie about two guys on a road trip to beat up everyone on the internet who anonymously slag him, and he has characters point out how that's a bad idea, and then he goes and makes an entire movie to serve those internet people, and it's fucking terrible.
Yeah.
But I think it not to like psychoanalyze too much, but I can I don't think that he was mentally aware or perceived it as that, as like going back to the well. Like, I don't think, and if he did
but
think
how
that,
can you not?
It's called Clerks 2. No, he viewed
it's the definition.
No, he viewed it as, I'm Dontan Randall. Like, that's me. Like, this is where I started. I'm in the convenience store, whatever. So over the 12 years that went from the difference between Clerks and Clerks 2, all this stuff has happened to him. So he's saying, like, I can explore my life issues in these same characters who are now my age, and now they're going through the problems that, you know what I mean?
But like, it's like Jay-Z going into retirement and then doing another album, like, 6 months later. Like, why close the book on View Askew, get critically panned with your next serious attempt, and then come back?
Obviously, that's what it was. I'm just saying, in his mind, that's not what
to
it is.
To call it straight up, you look like a bitch.
No.
Like, I'm going to tell it straight. Like, I remember when Jay and Silent Bob came out, like, I couldn't have been more excited. It was over. I was a kid, and I was like, great, done. When I heard that Clerks 2 was being made, just the concept of it made me kind of sick.
I had no desire to see it.
I was like, what the fuck are you thinking? That's a terrible idea. But I love Kevin Smith, and I didn't like Jersey Girl, but I still respected him, and I was like, all right, well, you know, I'll give you a shot. I'll go see the movie, and let's have no bones about it. We all just watched it. I mean, Richard, you probably like it more than we do.
Oh, okay.
But I'm assuming.
What's your opinion?
I won't paint a pretty picture. Like, I think Clerks 2 is a piece of fucking shit. Like, it is a horrible, horrible
It is
movie.
An abortion like, of cinema.
I don't want you to take a personal offense, because I feel everyone's opinion is their own. Like, I don't know how you feel, but.
You're wrong. Richard, okay. Richard okay. Has no
as the
wrong.
Fan club number one lover of Clerks 2. How do you think?
As the president of Kevin Smith's fan club, I feel the need to shoot him. No. I agree that it's bad. There are parts of it that I find very amusing and things that I think that are funny. The funniest things are the Jay and Silent Bob stuff. But I felt that they did things like, again, bringing an Affleck character who's not any of the characters in the Askewverse just to appear.
Affleck with a mustache.
and then to bring Jason Lee back as
another new
character to not have him be... It's almost like, as much as these movies are a part of the View Askewverse or whatever you want to call it, that the Clerks universe is separate from the Mallrats universe, which is separate from the Chasing Amy universe. They talk about similar events, but like...
Right, like in Chasing Amy, they're like, snooch the newts, like, that's retarded. And
yeah.
So clearly, it's not the exact same universe.
But, Jason Lee's character of Brody or Banky would not appear in the Clerks universe. Instead of using the character of Brody or the character of Banky, he decided to invent another character who serves no purpose to the story whatsoever, who is not interesting. Someone that they don't like, and he comes in and they're already, oh, I don't like you, and you made me feel bad. It was very sloppy. Everything was sloppy.
Well, it feels like lazy in a way.
This movie's lazy.
I would almost forgive it. Like, I totally don't like reopening the book and going back to it. But if the movie was funny, I could see a part of me being like, I didn't want to go back here, but like, at least I had some laughs. Like, he did not bring his A game to the dialogue or to the comedy. I think it's fucking boring a lot of the time.
Mostly
like,
boring.
To caveat it by
sucks,
saying,
like,
if it was funny, I'd like it. It's hilarious because,
yeah.
Like, sure. If it was
well,
a good
no,
movie,
I think
I'd
it's like
it
if
too.
It's funny, then I would justify it reopening this universe that he had claimed to give up.
Yeah, sure.
But like, I don't know, like the cinematography felt like it was just half-assed. Like, there's nothing about the lighting, the way it was shot, the color saturation. It was like everything was just like, yeah, we'll just turn a camera on, whatever, we get it, that's going in the movie.
Yeah, it's like his heart's not in that movie.
Yeah, not at all. Which
he's
is
not really trying. He's just going through the motions.
He should have called in the writers from the animated series.
Yeah.
I'm not joking. You should call on those writers.
I agree.
And say, hey, you know, I want to write another Clerks, but I want to make it a movie.
Weren't there talks at some point of making a Clerks cartoon movie?
Movie.
They have batted that around a lot,
so
I think.
Much better.
Yeah, it would have been a lot better.
It would have been more interesting. Could have been funny. It could have been kooky, crazy. It would have followed that line of Jay and Silent Bob.
That cartoon was great.
Yeah, it was a really fun cartoon. And it was just as crazy as Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. Having seen what the movie is, that's what I would have wanted more.
It's just weird because it's like I don't get the sense that he sees a difference between the first Clerks and this Clerks in terms of how he approached it, how he wrote it, what he put into it.
You think
kind of thing.
He watches it and is like, this is just as funny as Clerks.
I don't think
like,
he watches it and says that. I'm just saying I think he tried as hard. Like, I don't think that
Like he just didn't have it in him, basically.
I know. I just think you lose it. Like, you just lose perspective on it. I think there's a reason why, as an artist, you're meant to move on and do something different and not make
Clerks. Well, it's almost
too,
like,
you know?
In Clerks, it's like, that was his life. He fucking worked that register. He had the personal life experience of the asshole customers.
Yes.
And all that. He sits down and he fucking hammers it out. Like, it's all true and it's all awesome. And Clerks 2... Oh, I'll take my life as it is now and all my shitty Hollywood movies that I fucked up and like didn't work.
Right.
And I'll work out my angst through these characters from my first movie, but I sincerely doubt, maybe he's worked at a fast food drive-thru, but certainly not in the near future. Like, that's not his life anymore.
There is absolutely 0% of this movie that I find believable.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
He feels like out of touch.
Even in Jay and Silent Bob at its most kooky, there's elements of at least character that I was like, okay, I can relate to that. Clerks 2's got jack shit going on. You know what I mean? It's like, at some point, we're watching a guy fuck a donkey. Like, just, we're actually watching that happen. Can we talk about that?
Right.
Like, that is, even in View Askew Universe, that's beyond okay.
Well, they flirt with, like Randall talks about watching Hermaphrodites and stuff, and they definitely
do. But we don't
but
watch
not,
it.
But it's not meant to,
That's an afterthought. That's a joke.
Like,
that's
we don't watch the Hermaphrodites fucking laugh.
That's
like,
a joke. That's, yeah. The guy fucking the donkey is not a joke to me. That we are watching that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's upsetting.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
But it's also, like, I'm just saying, this is how his, or I mean, it's like really presumptuous, but like, this is how his brain works. It's like, he feels like, oh shit, everything's fucked. I need to win everybody back, blah, 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 blah. But even that realization is too painful to admit that like you fucked up that hard. So it's all just like justified by like, oh, it represents my life. And it's like, all this stuff. I think he's like convinced himself.
He whammied himself.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he doesn't see it that way. So it's like, you know, he's not like, it's not.
But I can't, I refuse to believe in the dead of night when he's on his Avid by himself alone in his apartment editing this movie that he's like, fucking nailed it. Like, I refuse to believe.
I believe it. Well, I truly think he had full confidence in that.
Well, I could see him.
I mean,
like,
I think before it came out, like, I remember like reading stuff on his website and stuff when I was really big Kevin Smith fan, like before Jersey Girl came out, he would like write a blog about shooting it.
Yeah.
And he'd be like, today was a great day, man. Liv Tyler fucking nailed it. She's amazing. Like these long, long, long paragraphs about how great all these actors are and how great the dailies are and how he's so excited. But I think that's probably like, maybe his lack of confidence is like a lot of
his
downfall.
He does that with every movie.
Is it like, he thinks it's awesome and then, but like he listens way too much about like what other people say and he's worried about the reaction.
Right.
He should just be like, that's where Clerks 2 comes from, is this thing of like, I'm doing it to please people. Like, what do you want from
me?
What do you want me
to
be?
What's crazy to me is if you're going to try to please people and like get one out there for the fans and get them back on your side, like what's that dude's name? Like Elias? The character of Elias in
the
movie,
worst.
You bring
Although,
that kid in.
I'm gonna call it. I'm gonna tell you what I think is the funniest part of this movie. You probably won't agree, but the pillow pants conversation. I don't know why I find that funny.
Well, it works for Randall's reaction.
Randall's
to it.
Reaction
so,
is really
and the music cue is pretty funny.
Yeah. That is the best thing that this movie has to offer. That says like a
no.
Huge
I know.
Amount.
I know. I'm totally in agreement. Like that. There's nothing funny in this movie to me except that, and that's even really bad.
Well, we can all agree that the worst, the hardest thing to watch is the thing with the Lord of the Rings guy and Randall like railing on the Lord of the Rings movies. To me, I'm just
could not agree more wholeheartedly. I actually would go so far as to like Randall. I almost let slide when he's knocking Lord of the Rings because it's kind like some of the stuff
he's just doing
to
get their
funny.
Goat. Yeah.
Like, I'm fine. I wouldn't even mind. Like, Kevin Smith doesn't like Lord of the Rings. That's fine. Like, that doesn't bother me. What it just brings me to the edge of rage is the idea of taking this ridiculous caricature of a character, this, like, Christian, nerdy guy that's, like, what the fuck happened? Like, Kevin Smith used to be this nerdy asshole talking about bullshit in a convenience store. Like, that was him. That was his life. You watch Clerks, they're talking about Star Wars. It's a sincere scene. Treat it as if it's like the most important thing in the world. When it comes to Lord of the Rings, that film is discussed by two ridiculous
He just got old.
Doofus's characters treated with no respect as if they are complete morons.
That's the
for
nature.
Even thinking about
talking
about
it. But that's
the
nature of Kevin Smith and his opinion. But how that opinionated is
so. He is. Can he not see how much of a fucking idiot he looks
no,
like?
No, he can't.
When
no,
you,
he can't.
Like, he could devote whole scenes to Star Wars and that's fine, but these guys are dumbasses for having, like, rings and, like, a little ring. He's such a fucking idiot. That is
oh,
so
shit.
Fucking stupid.
I agree. It
legitimately makes me angry. Because, A, like, what the fuck? You're going to take the stance that Lord of the Rings suck? Are you a fucking fool? Everyone in the world likes that movie. And this is the fucking movie you're bringing to the table? Like, fuck you, dude. Like Peter Jackson made one of the greatest trilogies ever, and you look like a fucking idiot in your stupid fucking movie that you suck ass at. You're like a total washout. You make this piece of shit, and then you're bad-mouthing Lord of the Rings? Like, are you kidding me? Like,
just
I was
everybody
the biggest...
knows. John just pulled out his one ring necklace.
And... I'm just saying, it went a long way. Like, I was really upset because I was a huge Kevin Smith fan. I gave him so much respect. And that movie, like, the fact that I was even still in the theater was like a miracle because it was so bad. And to get to that scene, it's fucking insulting.
This movie,
like,
definitely amounted to everything I always feared it would be.
The movie is about Rosario Dawson being in love with that fucking freak show. Come on. The entire movie is just batshit crazy.
Yeah,
awful.
Yeah. The whole idea that Dante has a choice, a romantic choice between Rosario Dawson
and Kevin Smith's
and
wife.
Kevin Smith's insane wife, who's wearing a shirt that says Mrs. Hicks
and they
looks
make,
like
and
a Skeletor.
They,
like,
and they make the wife a... like the or the fiance like a bitch.
Yeah,
like,
unlikable.
On top
yeah, she's
of that.
Horrible.
Why would and you ever want to be with her?
Am I the only one that's like, is there a weird repressed like that's his wife?
Yeah, who he's
and
having
that's
make
the character
out with
in
Dante.
The movie? Like, is there a little bit of like maybe she's too naive to see it? Is there a little of like he's kind of Dante and
he's trying to give her a message? Or
is
something?
Their marriage all it would be? Like, what's going on?
I don't.
Like,
I can't speak to that because
I don't
I,
think so. Because I think the Jersey really girl
her.
Thing is like the
right,
family.
Like, he legit loves
he
her.
Yeah, he's into it.
But my only knowledge of her is from these movies, and I can't stand her in this movie.
Is like. There anything that this movie actually succeeds at? Really? I mean, let's be honest.
I mean.
No.
I mean,
there's
no
point for it to exist.
Even
no.
bringing
so no
Jay
purpose.
And Silent Bob back, like, I'd swear no. most of these movies, in most of the time, at the lowest movies, it, like, Jay and Silent Bob would always make me laugh. Like, Jay, yeah. there'd be a bad scene, Jay would say something fucking hilarious, and it'd be right back on
yeah,
board.
It's just not there.
Jay and Silent Bob are sad in Clerks, too.
The only joke that they had that I remember being really into was when Jay starts singing to the camera.
Well, he like sings, what, is it Wild Horses, or what's that song?
No, yeah. he dances to
Goodbye
the,
Horses, I think
he dances to the song from
Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah,
the
when
Lambs.
He looks to the camera and does that, that was a classic Jay, like, I enjoy right. this moment. Everything else was just kind
oh
of
God,
like...
an hour and 40 minutes, and that is the one fucking second well, that was enjoyable.
And even when we were watching, I was saying, like, it started that joke, and it had a there was a conclusion to that joke that it came back to.
Yeah,
but you completely forgot about
yeah,
it.
Like
and,
15
and,
minutes later.
Yeah, and it yeah. wasn't as funny. It wasn't as shocking. Like had they cut away from it and then gone out back like right away, like in a more believable amount of time. That it just like it took too long to come back to that joke, and it's a funny joke. It's funny that he goes
no, it
to
is.
The,
yeah.
he goes,
it really is,
he goes but, to the extreme.
Well, it's just poorly paced. Like yeah. it just
dude, that movie's just a let's all just. That's a big
dude,
fucking steaming turd of a movie.
When that like kid, they when they drop the parents drop him off, they're all whistling.
Oh,
it's like
so dumb.
What
about
the
what?
The
who,
racial?
Who, do,
who
is doing
thing?
That?
Oh yeah, that was kind of weird too.
That was just so.
Oh, when they talk
awkward,
about
where he goes on like a
or?
Yeah, it's like
John.
Kevin Smith
sorry,
getting
I,
on.
It's
a,
in the it's in the movie.
You need to apologize.
Kevin
I'm
Smith
sorry
getting on
that
a
I
weird
said
soapbox about that
again.
Not to change the subject away from other bad parts of the movie. But, like, that was... I almost forgot about it until just now, and, like...
Yeah.
It was just, like, a five-minute, weird, awful part.
Yeah, it doesn't make Randall... I mean, he's... Usually when he's being a dick, it doesn't make him not likable. But you really watch that stuff with Randall, and you're kind of like, really?
Yeah, this whole movie, like, it's not like in the original Clerks where Randall's saying all the stuff that, yeah, you kind of feel that way, and he's kind of acting out a part of you that you feel.
And you are in no way with him.
Like, yeah. Through anything. Through the Lord of the Rings bashing and through the, like, you know.
Yeah, he looks like an old, out-of-touch guy.
Yeah. Oh, they light him. They're all lit like monsters, and, like, no offense to fucking Randall and Dante, but neither of them have skin that is supposed to be lit and shot in digital, or I don't know how they shot that, but it looked like digital, and
you can see every, like, crevice of their
every
faces.
Every fucking nook
how
and cranny. They look like
Dawson
monsters.
Fall in love with that.
I don't know, but she
how does
still
that
looks,
happen?
You I know love how, like, totally vain and superficial we give that, but I as far as a movie is concerned, even within the realm of that movie, you have to kind of question it.
Well, no, let's call it like it is.
It's a casting
laughable.
Issue. Yeah. It's a casting issue. It. We can't
well,
do that.
That Rosario Dawson likes him, but even if you buy that, it is insane that this guy even has a moment's hesitation. Like, what the fuck is wrong with him? Like, Dante's the dumbest man on the face of the planet. He's got this, like, Skeletor wife that, like, okay, she's nice, fine. And the
but
fucking
she's not
Rosario
nice.
Dawson, like...
No, but that's the whole point, is that he's engaged to a woman that... Okay, like, let's not get too jerk here, but she's not particularly attractive, at least in this universe, for these characters. She's mean, or not necessarily mean, but she's, like, kind of, like, not nice to be around. She's not enjoyable to be around. And then he's choosing her over a gorgeous, kind of nerdy,
likable person. Their relationship
with
him and his fiancée is believable.
Yes.
That's the only girl he's sleeping with. If that's all Dante can get... Like, you buy he'd be with that girl. But once you've learned that he has fucked Rosario Dawson, and on top of that, she's pregnant with his kid, like, what? like, you've already had sex with her. Like, what are you? Well, fuck is wrong with you? What's the debate?
John, there's, he clearly like, should move to Florida.
Oh, my God. I wouldn't for a second get in that car and move to Florida with that woman. I would immediately
get
like
that there's
Rosario
even, like,
Dawson.
A dilemma. Like, he's in the prison cell. Like, oh, what am I going to do? Like, first of all, you're a father. Like, even if he wasn't, like, your choice to be with Rosario, at that point, it's like, well, shit, man, you've got responsibilities.
But, Matthew, she doesn't believe in romantic love.
Oh, my God.
Or in pregnancy.
She believes in musical dance numbers.
She believes in shaking that sweet keister in dance numbers. That is the only entertaining part of that movie, is watching her boobs.
Again, I'm Rosario uncomfortable. I'm boob.
But, I mean, maybe Kevin Smith has a perspective. Like, if he genuinely loves his wife and finds her beautiful and, like, loves
sure.
her.
Yeah.
When he's watching that movie, I guess he could see there being a balance. But you as an objective viewer, like, there is just
at the very least, if you're going to make the Mrs. Hicks character, like, cast her as Mrs. Hicks.
Yeah, like, get someone else in that role.
No, I'm saying, if he casts his wife, make that character someone enjoyable. Or, like, make the character likable. Like, give her a heart. You know what I mean? Like, make you
want
because
the more of a bitch she is, the more you're like, what are you even, like, debating?
Well, I disagree only in the respects that I like her character the way she is, that she's controlling and that he has no choice. But when you combine that with the very attractive Rosario Dawson, I think if they had cast someone else for Rosario Dawson's character, like someone of, I feel so mean saying, of comparable.
Well, just look at the first Clerks, you know, there's the two. It's not like.
Right, like Caitlin Bree's like pretty.
Yeah.
But she's not like. An insanely attractive Hollywood like.
But both the girls in Clerks 1 are comparable in appearance.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And I think that had, you know, Mrs. Hicks, like, had looked like the same kind of woman, I would kind of understand, you know, like, he's with her, you know, she's controlling, but that's kind of Dante. He's always going with the people who are in control. He's afraid. You know, he's feel like he's getting older. I kind of can see all that. But then, again, when you compare it with a totally attractive Rosario Dawson, and he's conflicted about his choice.
And Rosario Dawson's cool. Her character, she's nice, she's funny, she's good to be around.
Yeah.
It's like, to me, the idea is, like, it's really less about the attractive. I mean, I can see the problem with the
believability issue, not like a shallow.
Yeah, it's not like, oh, like, I'm not attracted to her, so, like, get her out. It's like, what's that, the actress that was in Knocked Up that plays Paul Rudd's wife?
Oh, Judd Apatow's wife?
Yeah, like, she, like, to me, that's a perfect example.
Leslie Mann.
Right?
Is that right?
Yeah, Leslie Mann.
I think so, yeah.
Like, that's to me the perfect analogy, because it's like, Judd Apatow, he casts his wife, she's actually quite a talented actress. But in that movie, she has all these qualities that Mrs. Hicks sort of have. It's like, oh, am I connecting with her? She's a little bit annoying. She's controlling.
Right.
By the end of that movie, when she gives the Spider-Man speech, she's like,
I like Spider-Man.
Why didn't you take me to that? That character has something to her that you believe in, and you connect with her.
Yeah. Right. And she's not a caricature. She's a character.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel for Leslie Mann in Knocked Up, and even with her faults.
Ooh. And all the characters in Clerks 2 are just cartoon shows. They're not, like, they're so two-dimensional.
He almost falls into the trap of, like, as much as I like Clerks, that movie is about Dante.
Yeah.
And the two girls, aside from how he feels about them, you don't really get much of their character.
No.
And you feel like Kevin Smith makes these like leaps and bounds in Chasing Amy, where like, yes, she's the girl that the main guy likes, but you get an idea of her as a character beyond just that guy's girlfriend.
Yeah.
So for him to sort of almost regress in Clerks 2 to this level of like, the women in the movie are just like chess pieces for Dante to decide over. They're not significant outside of that. It's
I'd say there was an attempt to make Rosario a character, but it was a failed attempt.
She was miscast, just entirely miscast.
Yeah,
but I even think Jen Chuava was fine for that part. If Rosario Dawson wasn't there, if a reasonable girl was there, it would have made a lot more sense.
It's just too shocking.
Yeah.
To put someone like that in their universe is just like, what?
So I'll be the one that goes out and says it. When he makes Clerks 3...
Oh, man.
I'll probably still see it. Even though I do think that this movie was one of the worst movies I've seen.
I promised myself I would never watch Clerks 2, and I did it for this marathon. I'm now declaring my promise that I will never watch Clerks 3.
So what if I go
3.
See Clerks 3 in the movie theater and I come out and I say, like, look, you gotta go see it, man. It's good stuff. Will you see it, or are you like putting your foot down now for good?
I'm calling it. I'm putting my foot down.
I bet there won't be a Clerks.
You don't think
3.
So?
I don't think so. I'd bet against it.
I think the story of Kevin Smith in terms of my fanship of him is really a sad story. Because if you go to... It went to a place where I could not fucking wait to see the next movie this guy made. To the point where, like, what's the last movie he made? Cop Out? I haven't even seen that movie. I didn't even see
what?
The movie.
How could you not see Cop Out?
But
I've seen it, like,
isn't
three
that
times.
Like, if you think about a director you love and worship, the fact that you... I don't even give a shit if I've seen the last movie he made... It's sad. So, and I think Clerks 2 is really like, it's just sad.
It is
sad.
Kevin Smith will tell you that he's not a filmmaker. Like, he will be the one to tell you that directing movies is really not his strength, and that he's a storyteller of some sort that exists in this world outside of movies. But
see, I don't know. I feel like that's like, again, not to get too like psychoanalytical, but like that's his own like flaws. Like, that's bullshit. Because it's like,
but I kind
we
of
were talking about
them.
Chasing Amy. It's like,
yeah, that
there
is
you go. He fucking did it. Like, what is he talking
yeah,
about?
That movie is almost, it was almost painful for me to watch. Because
so
I
good.
Remembered how great it was. It's like, what? It's like fucking like Blue Album and Pinkerton or something. Like, you watch that and you're like, yeah. Oh my God, like they have the magic. And then now here comes just the bullshit show.
Yeah,
like,
and now,
it's insane.
And then for him to say he wasn't a director and then to make this Red State and have this weird campaign that he's on now for this, like, there's something there that he really does feel like there's something in him. He still thinks it's there.
He's trying to, like, clean the slate again. Like,
yeah.
You know, just trying to wipe everything clean and being like, here's my new thing. You
and
know?
To take it back to the blog post you mentioned about Liv Tyler, he definitely, for Red State, all he talks about is how amazing it's going to be, and it's going to be amazing, it's going to be amazing, it's going to be amazing. And
yeah,
I'm pretty sure
that
he does that for every movie, and then he disowns them later.
I feel like every movie since the end of Viewisk Universe, like with Jan Silent Bob, it has been him trying to find a clean slate. He ended that, he goes, he says, okay, I'm doing Jersey Girl, clean slate, this is something I'm doing. He got terrible reaction. Then Clerks 2 is like, you know what? I'm taking it back to what we're doing. I'm going to give you a new movie that I feel like brings us back to that. Didn't work. Now he's on the cop out. Clean slate. He's like, well, I'm a director for hire.
Apatow try.
Right. Zach and Mary make a porno.
He's like, oh, now I'm going to make an Judd Apatow movie.
Yeah, now I'm doing
I'm
that.
I'm going to reinvent myself as like a new comedian.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that was in line with all of his other movies, like as far as themes.
Well, maybe it's just the fault of the marketing in the movie.
I think
they throw Seth Rogen in there.
Seth Rogen.
And
what's
you market
face?
It from the guys that deal
a little. No, it's like, shot. It's shot like an Apatow movie.
Yeah.
There's nothing about Zach and Miri that makes me feel like I'm watching a Viewisk Universe movie at all. At all. And then like when Cop Out comes out and he announces that now he's like, yeah, I'm basically working as a director for hire right now.
Well,
anyway, so Red State, we're watching it.
I'll see Red State.
Yeah,
why not?
We're all gonna check it
out.
Oh
no, I'll see it. I think unlike Cop Out, Red State at least has this idea of like it's what is it like an independent movie?
Yeah.
He's like I'm reinventing myself. Like I'll always if Kevin Smith like I kind of fell out of watching him when he went into this very commercial. Like I'm just gonna be a hired director and kind of just make whatever. But if he's going back and trying to make his own movie, I mean, I'll watch it.
So what about the fact that, okay, so now he runs an entire network of podcasts that's like almost a dozen podcasts, I believe. Oh, yeah.
We should talk about Smodcastle. Sure, sure. Smodcast.
So he interviews other filmmakers. He interviews Jason Mewes. He interviews his wife. He interviews his producing partner. Those are all different podcasts. So he does this entire thing. He's also announced that once he has released Red State, he's going to use everything he learned about independent distribution to distribute other people's movies like that. Is that interesting? Like, I'm interested to hear what you guys think about that. As film lovers.
Distributing movies, that sounds interesting. I'm all for that. I understand you're a fan of these podcasts and you listen to them and stuff. I personally have actually never listened to them, so I can't speak to that. But as a viewer outside of that, honestly, my reaction to his five podcasts a week and just being obsessed with being known and talking to fans and stuff, it just makes me kind of sad. It seems like desperate. Yeah. Cry for attention.
It is, but at the same time, for some reason, I don't know when it happened, but you know, as anyone who has listened to this would know, like I wasn't a big fan of the last like three movies that we watched on this or the other ones that we haven't even watched of his. Yet I consider myself to be like somehow still a huge Kevin Smith fan.
Well, you just like him as a person.
I do. Well, I like so much about him that it's awkward that I kind of hate his movies, except for the opening trilogy. So Up Through Chasing Amy, like, I love that.
He's clearly a funny guy. I mean, he has talent.
All the Interview with Kevin Smith DVDs, all of those types of things.
Have you ever watched The Evening with Kevin Smith?
I have. And that I did enjoy. Like, he's funny.
That's what Smodcast is. Yeah. That's basically what it is. It's just him doing that shtick where he's just like, he's not quite stand-up.
But I think there's a weird line between going on tour to colleges and doing a DVD of like, hey, let me just kind of talk for one evening or five or however many, and erecting your own theater.
Yeah, every day. Basically.
Charging tickets for people to come to the big gallery, and he's going to do a daily program
with his wife. He's been talking about doing it literally 1 hour every morning.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly think all that shows is the ultimate downfall of Kevin Smith to me is he's just completely insecure and doesn't have confidence in himself. Because if he feels this need to be loved by people.
That doesn't – it's weird because, like, I agree. Like, I think that there are these huge problems with his persona that's kind of – he's shitting on his own career and who he is. But at the same time, like, that is what I really love about his podcast. And I think that – what comes through about him in his podcasts, as somebody that listens to them, like, sadly, almost every day, is, like, the opposite. It's full self-confidence to the extent that he will self-finance, for the most part, a whole movie and then distribute it and literally carry it on his back around the country.
Well, maybe it sounds almost like the joy we used to get out of watching Kevin Smith movies. Like, you're almost saying that humor and that connection to him has sort of morphed into now it's podcast.
Would you turned his life into an experiment of like openness that I think that's in the end what I really love about him is that he has just laid himself bare for like anyone.
Would you
who
feel
cares.
The same way about this whole like Smodcast or podcast idea if it was in fact a radio show? If he was putting himself up like a morning radio show, you're driving to work, Kevin Smith now has an hour of your day.
There are fine lines. Like, I feel in my gut reaction is like, I don't have a problem with podcasting in general. I don't think there's a problem with him giving a part of himself out there
on your podcast.
No. I know exactly. Like, I don't think there's a problem with having a part of you connect to your fans through the public. I feel like Kevin Smith has gone down this rabbit hole of like, Twitter. It's gotten to be a problem. We're like, if you're talking about fucking your wife every day for fucking hours and every minute of your life you're updating Twitter feeds or viewing podcasts. Like, you have a problem on the level of like a heroin addiction or something. Like, he is addicted.
For sure. That's the
like,
word.
Like, no one should be exposed all the time. Especially not Kevin Smith, because honestly, I think it's to the detriment of his movie.
I am burning out on it a little bit, but I think that honestly, I'm burning out on it because he's back into a movie, and like his movie mode is what I find the least tasteful. Is him like pimping the
like
shit
Mr.
out of
Promoter.
His movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you, think about this whole like having people come view the movie at $150 a pop to finance its distribution? Like, I think that's a pretty strange.
I don't know. I mean, it sounds like he's trying a crazy experiment. Honestly, I feel like everything Kevin Smith, all this craziness, is literally just like him. Like, I feel like he had
lost.
He had it with Chasing Amy, and he just, if he'd have just listened to himself and trusted in what he thought.
Red State might
like,
be good.
But I don't know.
Well,
I don't
it's
know.
Like, Red make State's Jersey good. Girl.
Listening to himself and trusting himself as Jersey Girl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why he
But to me, the answer is not Clerks 2. Yeah, that's the mistake. To me, like
not Jersey Girl.
Yeah. I love Kevin Smith. I didn't like Jersey Girl, but my whole attitude is like, hey, everybody gets one. You know, I don't have to like every movie you make.
Yeah, but then one turned into five.
But people treated that Jersey Girl like his fan base, like the sky was falling. Like nobody was
out. But to me, the Clerks 2 was the dagger in my heart. That like Jersey Girl was just wouldn't be that painful for me. Well, I mean, of all the marathons we've done, I think the Kevin Smith one kind of hit home for me in a way that it's interesting. It's a unique, I think, arc.
His journey
to have such
ours.
A rise and such a fall in the span of movies, I think, is pretty interesting.
I think this is one of the first marathons we've done where it was something that really mattered to us that we grew with. You know what I mean? Like a lot of the marathons we've done, like say, Bondathon or you know, Scream, like these are things that like we experienced, but they weren't like Kevin Smith's movies have been a defining moment of our generation.
Well, they span such a long time.
Yeah.
Well, and Kevin Smith himself, as most of us are film people, here's a success story. He made a movie, and he got successful, and he made a couple of really good movies, and he's still working today. So to go from that thing like, oh wow, you know, when, you know, he's not that much older than me, so I can do that. But now to see like how he's gone up and then come down, you kind of take it to that. Oh my gosh, maybe I won't make it. Yeah. Or maybe I'll end up like
that. He's like a folk hero.
Yeah, there's a level of personal investment I had in this that I never had doing like the Mad Max marathon. You know what I mean? Like,
well,
it doesn't
reflect
anything.
If there's any silver lining to this Cinemarathon, I think it's that for several years now, all my thoughts of Kevin Smith have all been primarily negative or disappointment, really. Yeah. And it was kind of nice in a day to go over his body of work. I mean, obviously, we're talking about Clerks 2. We don't like it. It's a bad way to go
out. It's the worst.
But part of me really enjoyed revisiting his earlier movies, and especially with Chasing Amy.
It's not like he was a hack.
Getting to see that again and almost re-falling in love with the parts that I liked about him. Like, I'm walking out of it. There's sadness and disappointment, but there's also some joy too, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why it's like, it's like we could be, this podcast could be like a thing where he would want to fly and come beat us up, like the end of, you know,
right, James Bond Bob Strike Back.
I mean, because the whole thing is like, why are people bitching about, like, you know, like, all that kind of stuff.
It's just a movie.
It's because we love it. Like, we like Kevin Smith. We like what he made. Like, we think he can do better than Clerks 2, which is why Clerks 2 pisses us off. Not because, like, we hate him or
something. It's the same sort of emotion that goes like into Weezer fans, where it's really like, you could do better.
Yeah.
It's like the level, where you put it is like, you. I know you're better than this. I know
exactly.
You can do better.
He has flown too high on wax wings, you know? He got a little too close to the sun, and
because that like, it's in there. It's in there for that guy to be an auteur. Like, that's all that stuff about, like, well, I'm not really a director. Like, I think that's, like, bullshit that he says that. Because it's, like, it's
to
kind of
cop
like,
out.
What's that that show where it's, like, all the famous people sit around a table with Jon Favreau?
Dinner for Five?
Dinner for Five. I think I saw an episode that he was on where he was like, I can't believe I'm sitting here with all you talented people.
That's like a podcast kind of like that show.
There's like,
now that I think
it really
it.
Is.
There's like
yeah,
no.
Totally
he was
like
there's no reason for me to be even sitting with you guys. Like, I've made some good movies, but I can't justify being here. And I thought that was an interesting perspective from him. And I think it's what sort of guided or misguided him in his past four movies. Yeah.
Well, I'd like to thank everyone for joining me on this podcast, Richard.
Yep.
Matthew,
thank
Alexei,
you.
Dan.
Thank you.
Snoochie Boochies.
Thank you very much. I don't know what we're doing next month, but I'm sure we'll figure it out soon. We'll be back with another Cinemarathon.
I'm pretty sure it's finally going to be Police Academy.
You've been pimping that hard.
Nope.
But, you know, I could be talked into it.
It might just be me and Richard.
Yeah, I totally have a... My vote is...
My fear about Police Academy is I haven't really seen any of those movies.
I've never seen
any
of them.
My worry is you see one and you don't like it, and
that,
now strap in because there's like
that's the point of the Cinemarathon. I mean,
well, I like the idea of good to bad, or like, I like ebbs and flows, movies. But like, to me, Police Academy, that's all or nothing. Like, it's either good or bad.
I have a feeling, let's say all seven of those movies are shit, which it could possibly be, you come out on the other end with a pretty funny podcast.
Just saying. All right. Well, dear listeners, you will find out next month whether we do the Police Academy movies. Or we had talked about prior to this doing the Rambo movies.
I would also be
down. Which I think would be good. So maybe we'll do Rambo next and then entertain the idea.
We should also do Die Hard at some point.
Yeah, Die Hard. Well, you know, I've never seen Live Free or Die Hard.
They're making a new one.
Really?
This one is like...
Great. Script. Is it going to be PG this time? Like,
yeah, that's why I didn't see the other one, because it's like, if it's not R,
buy the unrated DVD, losers.
Yeah, whatever.
Nope.
Die Hard 5, rated G.
I'm just going to rent Cop Out and watch that one and finally get to that one.
Don't.
All right, well, thanks for listening, right, guys, thanks. And we'll see you next month.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.